You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 31st, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we swear we have absolutely no intention of suing the Michelle Obama podcast for copyright infringement, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal. Apparently, there's another married couple that's lived in Springfield for a while.
That has a Midwestern accent.
Yeah.
And she gets mad at him for messing up her sound editing.
Yeah. I've got a couple of kids, I understand, who are kind of kooky.
You know, high school, college-age kids You know, reaching that 60 threshold. And,
you know,
they talk a little bit about politics, a little bit about their family, a little bit about, everything.
I want to encourage these upstarts, the youngsters.
I was going to say, maybe not judge them on their first episode.
No. But we would like to invite them to join the Professional Left Cornfield Resistance Podcast Network.
They can join our network. Absolutely. They can be the first ones, even. We'll be extra nice because, he's from Illinois. So,
We will match your actual sponsors to our fake sponsors one to one. And in an act of generosity, I think it's unprecedented across the podcast world. So, Michelle Barack.
We do welcome Michelle Obama to the podcast universe. And what a fun show. And not an accident that Barack Obama is back in the in the sphere of things.
No.
And very political. Do you want to start with that?
Sure.
You know, first of all, he pissed off conservatives. Very predictable. Not at all a surprise. Not worried about that.
No.
Tucker
Carlson lost his mind, for goodness sakes.
Oh, called him a greasy politician. Yeah, if Tucker Carlson should keep Obama's name out of his mouth. Anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Barack Obama at John Lewis's funeral eulogized John Lewis and laid out a plan to improve civil rights in America.
Yes.
By expanding voting to all Americans.
I know it's shocking that you'd bring up civil rights at a civil rights leader funeral, but he went ahead and did it. That crazy Obama did.
Mm-hmm. I listened to most of that funeral, and like all funerals, it was emotionally draining.
Yeah.
And drained my energy as well, but in a good way. And I kept thinking, you know whose voice is missing at this funeral? John Lewis.
Yeah.
Obama spoke, and I was like, oh, there it is.
Oh, yeah. John Lewis would be great at this. Oh,
I kept thinking John Lewis would know exactly what to say at this funeral. And that's a sure sign that someone has made an impact on the world me. It's like when you're hearing people eulogize him over and over again, you're just like, yeah, but I want to hear from John Lewis about this. I was like, oh, yeah, he's gone. Right. So 80, good run.
Yep.
Contributed. We should all make such an impact on the world as John Lewis, and we never will. Yeah. But grateful for his contribution to the universe, and he leaves a long legacy, and particularly his staff, the woman who spoke on behalf of his staff. She knows where she's going in life. She's got a mission in life.
Yeah.
There's no question that he has inspired many, many, many people to follow in his footsteps.
And one thing I did appreciate about Barack Obama's way of speaking, what he talked about, was it is easy to remember legends as carved in granite.
Uh-huh.
This is an inevitable, the sweep of history simply brought this man or these men along, and it was just going to happen that way. I'm like, no. These were kids. These were young people who were raised right and went out and without any protection, any hope of being saved if the bus driver decided to, pull over and call the Klan or call the cops. There was no salvation for them out there. There were no TV cameras. There were no iPhones, nothing. And they just did it. And they did it over and over again. And they did it knowing the danger. Now, they were not ignorant of it. They were completely aware of what was threatening them. And they just – and every time they got beaten down, they got back up again and – pushed harder. And it was just it is really important to remember people as young people, as people who were not congressional lions, who were kids, who were putting their lives at risk with no hope of salvation should anything go wrong. And things went wrong all the horribly wrong, murderously wrong all the time.
I did love the fact that Lawrence on Thursday night aired Morgan Freeman reading John Lewis's last op-ed, which, as you said, this is a great way to get around the New York Times paywall.
That's genius.
But the thing that really struck me about that, you talk about the age of John Lewis and these were kids and so forth, and his line about Emmett Till being murdered and realizing that at the time John Lewis was Emmett Till's age. And knew that it could be him. And what a radicalizing thing to have happen to you, to know that this could be me. And I think that is the silver lining in all of what we're going through right now, is that so many people are being radicalized by Donald Trump. And he just can't help himself. He keeps stepping on that rake that makes more and more people go, no, everyone should have health care. No, everyone should have a safe place to live. And the more and more that he tries to squeeze America for his own profit, the more we realize, no, we need guardrails in place to prevent this from ever happening again. Well, and part of those guardrails are the Voting Rights Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, and you and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, because as we've mentioned before, this podcast is just basically what we talk about anyway with a microphone in between.
That's what tickled me about the Michelle Obama podcast too.
Is that it is Donald Trump is the worst aspects of Bull Connor and the worst aspects of George Wallace and the worst aspects of Spiro Agnew, and without any of their eloquence. He's just a knuckle dragging.
He doesn't have sapphire writing for him.
He's just a goon. He's just a big racist, loud, grifting asshole who lies every day, all day, every day, who is now the president of the United States. And the thing that we dwelt on yesterday, to the point where we said, you know what, we're podcasting now. Let's just be quiet.
We do that. We say that a lot during the week.
Let's do a puzzle or something, or get something to eat, and we'll talk later. Is that what bothers me, what really concerns me, is looking over the horizon and wondering what's going to happen to these 60 million idiots in this country, racist assholes in this country, who are absolutely locked in on this guy. And once he goes down one way or the other, whether it's in a few months or in a few years, once he's gone from the scene, that toxic real estate is just sitting there waiting for someone to claim it and build on it.
Because it's too valuable not to, as you said earlier this week, right? Well, let's read a letter from Ernest, who wrote us today exactly about that topic. Hey, guys, gals, and cats, love the show. Because of Cheeto's remarks about the election, I had a weird thought. The word everyone is using to describe MAGA is cult, but it is a cult of personality, not policy, as they show by supporting him no matter what. Only Reagan, in my mind, comes close to that loyalty, because no one really cares or knows anything he did, but they love him. Well, he fired the Patco workers, and I can list a lot of other things he did, too.
But I get
your point. And to that end, there's no real Reagan legacy, per se, in the Republican Party, because the party doesn't care about small government or lower taxes for all or balanced budgets or states' rights or anything else.
No.
It is important that a lot of his appeal was racist, but that's not unique to Reagan, and it's not unique to Trump. My question is, will there be a Trump legacy? All of the apparatus that made him will still be there. The racism will still be there, and QAnon is joining in. But my question is, will that 38% go with generic totalitarian? Or are they Trumpites who 20 years from now will be spewing Trump talking points with no real allegiance to any party? Or maybe better put, is it a Republican cult that produced Trump? Or did Trump form a cult of personality from the disenfranchised, and he puts a quote around that, right-wing bigots? No matter how or when he goes, does he start a YouTube channel one day with more views than many cable channels and become a kingmaker? Because he keeps that base come hell or high water. Stay safe, Ernest. Thank you, Ernest, for that letter. And I did reply briefly to Ernest and just say Donald Trump is way too lazy to do his own YouTube channel. Just, you know, everyone who has ever done a podcast or ever put together a show on YouTube knows it's a lot of work. And Donald Trump wants to phone in and spew nonsense for as long as he can and then hang up and be done and go golfing and collect a paycheck Yes. But he doesn't want to actually have to produce a show. Like, no, he didn't do that with The Apprentice. He showed up he didn't follow a script and he didn't, he didn't do what they told him to do. And that's what he wants is he wants his name on it and he wants to get a paycheck.
And as the producers would say, if things got too, you know, work intensive, he'd insist they come over and attend to his personal needs, which meant a change his depends and go out and do a couple of rails of Adderall and come back and just start gibbering half foot. And then just, whatever he says, we'll fix it in the editing booth. It doesn't matter what the fuck he actually says. It doesn't matter how many times he uses the N word on the set. We're going to cut all that out. We're going to paste it together and make it into a show. And that's what would happen. I'm gonna divert slightly and talk for a minute about Matt Lewis. But
okay.
But for the purpose of
this is on topic as to what's going to happen to MAGA, right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Because Matt Lewis and Charlie Sykes had a long conversation on the Bulwark podcast. Blah 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 blah. I'm not gonna about whether you should burn the Republican Party down or whether they just need a blow to the head. You know, Donald Trump needs to lose badly, but we can't lose the Senate. And Matt Lewis talked like a man who had been unconscious during the entire Obama administration. And this is true of pretty much all the Never Trumpers, whether you love them or like them or hate them or think they're doing great work. I think they're doing, as I said before, Pornhub for liberals. But whatever you think of them, there's just this blank spot in their recollection of the past where the Obama administration is, because the Obama administration, as we've said many times on this podcast, was a perfect laboratory experiment in what happens if you give conservatives what they say they really want from a Democrat. A nice, compromisey centrist who will arrive during a genuine crisis, who will reach out to them, who will take their ideas, who will incorporate them, who will desperately try to include them, who will beg them to make his ideas better, who will say, look, don't even call it Obamacare. Don't take my name off it completely. We have a healthcare problem. We have a global economic collapse. We have wars we have to get the hell out of, basically you people lied us into. We need a whole shitload of things we have to fix. Please, for God's sakes, help me fix this country. And I won't insult you. I will court the goodwill of George Will and David Brooks and Michael Gerson and all the people that you say that you love. I will go on bended knee to Congress and beg them for help. I'll do everything that you said you wanted from a nice, compromise, centrist Democrat. And they told him to go fuck himself. And they spent 8 years kneecapping him, lying about him, sabotaging him, filibustering their own bills. This is all pre-Trump. And then they nominated and elected the king of the birthers. So there is already evidence, overwhelming evidence, on the table of what Republicans will do once the bad orange man is gone. They will simply, you know, they will disperse into the weeds, they will reload, and they'll come back worse, more deranged, because the one thing that they can't stand is losing.
I want to interrupt you for a minute and just say that I believe that there are two Republican parties.
Yeah.
And they are equally bad.
Yes.
The one is the populist wing of base primary voters who voted for Trump and Trump and want Trump and go to Trump rallies and won. And they won against the Mitch McConnell, David Brooks, Chardonnay sipping Republican leadership that wanted to nominate Jeb Bush.
Yep.
Which is equally ahistorical or anti-historical, equally denying the past, inventing a world where another Bush is the answer.
Right.
And the fact that they did that, that they even suggested to the base, oh, no, we want Bush again, when the base had worked so hard to forget Bush.
Right.
And there had been, you know, the Tea Party movement.
The entire and fake Tea Party movement was
the entire AstroTurf rebranding scam that they had worked at, and they had done grassroots. You know, this was the whole IRS scandal. How dare the IRS write to me and tell me my Tea Party group is political?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's what it was. But those were white housewives in the white suburbs setting up 401c3s and 401c4s to fundraise mm-hmm. for Tea Party activities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it was all a forget. The strategic forgettery is what certain wag calls it.
Yes.
So proceed. I didn't mean to interrupt you, I wanted to make sure there was, we understand that there are two Republican parties.
Yes, there are. Well, there are many subgroups among the Republicans, all of whom are charging for the lifeboats at the same time. And there was
Last 100 days.
In the last 100 days, they're all sprinting for the lifeboats. So that's why we have to burn the lifeboats.
Mm-hmm.
But the Republican base is allergic to losing. That's what drove them a special kind of unhinged racist crazy when Barack Obama won.
And if your whole purpose of your party is no policy, no end in sight, no actual end game except own the libs.
Right.
If you don't own the libs, if the libs own you, you're a failure.
Well, and the idea that if you just hand the Republican Party an overwhelming wallop to the head, an overwhelming loss that doesn't sacrifice the actual party structure. We don't burn the party down. We don't get rid of Mitch McConnell. We just really, really kick him in the balls. That's what happened in 2008.
Yep.
And they went, this racist dung heap that already was the Republican Party completely lost their mind. They completely lost
Even more so in 2012 when Fox News promised them that Romney was going to win in a landslide.
Yeah, losing
to watching Fox for a week.
Losing to the black man drove them a special kind of crazy.
Yep.
And they've never recovered. And they've been looking for someone who will take them back to the promised land. That's the base. That's the racist, dumbass, asshole on Facebook, doesn't believe in masks, thinks Barack Obama still thinks he was born in Kenya, still thinks Clinton murdered people. That asshole, multiply him and her by 40 or 50 million, that's the Republican Party. That's the base. Now, you have a separate Republican Party, which cracked me up today. Because today, let me give a shout out to No More Mr. Nice blog.
Oh, he's great.
Steve M., who wrote up a wonderful vivisection of Peggy Noonan. Now, this is actually going someplace. Good. Peggy Noonan takes
who is the property of 10 Grain at Mock Paper Scissors, however.
That's true.
But, borrow that. That's all
right. Sole title to Peggy Noonan belongs to 10 Grain.
Yeah, but Steve M. is in the club, so it's all right.
We borrow from each other. We're all the same size, roughly. We borrow each other's clothes. Occasionally, someone else writes about David Brooks, and I don't kill them over it. So, we're all cool on here. But so he takes on – he points out that Peggy Noonan has taken up her hammer and tongs to go after the Never Trumpers.
Oh, really?
Now, why? Well, because of their hypocrisy. They never and this is a direct quote from Peggers.
Sounds jealous.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you didn't invite they didn't invite her to their club.
Uh-huh.
And now she's mad. Now I'm so mad. You didn't invite me to your club and now I'm really mad. And so she wrote, "But Never Trumpers never seem to judge themselves. Many of them, when they were profiting through past identities as Republican or conservative, supported or gave strategic cover to the wars that were such a calamity and attacked those who dissented." And I'm like,
where is Peggy Noonan's self-awareness?
This is why it's so glorious to watch and why it's so – it's because it really is – it is a human centipede that's a circle. They're just eating their own poop around and around and around because Peggy Noonan is really mad that the Never Trumpers don't take responsibility for all the shit they said and did during the Bush administration and the Trump administration and the Obama administration while assiduously avoiding any mention of the fact that she herself was exactly like this and supported Sarah Palin early on. And supported George
torture.
W. Bush.
Said we don't need to talk about torture.
And it's
surreal. It's too unpleasant to talk about torture. Let's just move on.
But there's a fight among these various, it's a small group of people, but they occupy an enormous amount.
And they're all
amount.
In the same lifeboat together.
And they're all in the media together. Yeah. They're all in the media. Yeah. And so what they're doing is they're fighting over which fake version of history will become the official version of history. The Peggy Noonan version of history, the Charlie Sykes version of history, the Rick Wilson version of history. They're all lies. They're all fake because they were all doing it. They were all guilty. But that none of them can admit – that's why they hate losing. None of them can admit they were wrong. None of them, because they would never survive. The base would eat them alive, and we would have nothing to do with them because, yeah, we've known all along you're liars, assholes. So the analogy I had in my mind watching these two go back and forth, sort more or less, was imagine you're taking a tour of the World War II Museum, and your tour guide is walking you through the Rise of Fascism exhibit. And your tour guide is pointing out the bad stuff. Oh, that was bad. That was bad. Oh, that was really bad. Oh, my God, that was terrible. And you know your tour guide's right. That was bad. Those mile markers along the road to fascism were really bad. Really, really bad. And then you look at your tour guide's name, and it's Albert Speer. You're like, wait a minute. Weren't you literally deeply involved in all of this? Didn't you actually build the Führer bunker? And Albert Speer announces, the tour is over. And that's it. Won't talk to you anymore. Because they really do want to hover above history as if they're like lawful neutral entities. They were never there. They were present, but they had nothing to do with it. They had no hand in anything. They never influenced anything. They never talked about anything. And the thing is, it's all on record. It's all written down. It's all on tape. You can look all this shit up. But they're competing with each other to figure out which of them is the most non-existent. We're never there. We were just witnessing what was happening. We had no influence over anything. These are all Republican operatives, all Republican speechwriters, all Republican policy people who had a deep, deep up. As I say, Peggy Noonan was up to her wine hole in this shit for decades. And to sit there and say, well, those never Trumpers never take responsibility for their stuff. I mean, there's all these bad things that happen. That's what's happening in the Republican Party right now. That's what Matt Lewis is doing right now. That's what Charlie Sykes is doing right now. That's what the base is doing right now. They're all competing for space on a lifeboat. But their stories, their alibis, all conflict with each other. So they're having this infight over who's going to take responsibility for this obviously bad shit that just happened. And the most honest person in this bunch so far, who's taken the largest step in the right direction, is, in my opinion, is Stuart Stevens of the New York Times. Yeah. Because the question is, which fake history is going to become the official history? Because remember, we have been through this before. The fake history of the Bush years became the official history of America, of the mainstream media, the minute the Bush people were gone. Suddenly, no Republican was responsible for anything. All of his speech writers had jobs in the media. No one knew how this war got started. It was all big mystery. And anyway, history began the minute Barack Obama touched the Bible. Anything before that was off limits. They do this every fucking time. And Stuart Stevens has finally said, and I'm going to quote him at length from the New York Times, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
After Mitt Romney lost, speaking of Mitt Romney, the 2012 presidential election, the Republican National Committee chairman, Reince Priebus, remember him? Commissioned an internal party study to examine why the party had won the popular vote only once since 1988. Remember, all the Never Trump people, all the Lincoln Project people are all bragging about their electoral prowess. These people have lost and lost and lost and lost.
Mitt Romney admitted it during the campaign. I mean, he was really trying to reach out to Hispanic voters and said, our party is failing and will be a permanent minority party if we don't do something about appealing to Hispanic voters. And then we got Trump.
Well, and back to Stuart Stevens, the result of that so-called autopsy was fairly obvious. The party needed to appeal to more people of color, reach out to younger voters, become more welcoming to women. Those conclusions were presented as not only a political necessity, but a moral mandate if the GOP were to become a governing party in a rapidly changing America. Then Donald Trump emerged and the party threw all those conclusions out the window with an almost audible sigh of relief. Thank God we can win without pretending we really cared about this stuff. That reaction was sadly predictable. Stuart Stevens then says, I spent decades working to elect Republicans, including Mr. Romney and four other presidential candidates. And I'm here to bear reluctant witness that Mr. Trump did not hijack the Republican Party. He is the logical conclusion of what that party became over the past 50 or so years. a natural product of the seeds of race baiting, self-deception, and anger that now dominate it. Hold Donald Trump up to a mirror, and that bulging, scowling orange face is today's Republican Party.
And amen to saying 50 years.
Yep. Yep.
That is critical.
And that is
telling the truth.
And yep. this is the part that's going to get very interesting. And you and I, you know, we're on the outside. None of these people care about anything we have to say about anything. But I will say this. What Stuart Stevens has basically said in print now in the New York Times is the left was right about the right all along.
And so let's see. Stuart Stevens' book is going to come out this month. I think it's the 16th.
Yes, it is.
Let's see if Stuart Stevens is on Morning Joe.
Well,
I'll be really interested to see if he's on
Morning Joe. That's a really interesting question, isn't it? I'll have more to say about that a little bit later. Yes. But right now,
I just want to point out, too, that in all of this, the thing that is missing is that Donald J. Trump and his idiot son-in-law are scraping millions from the Republican National Committee's infrastructure.
Yes, they are.
They are laundering millions of dollars through Trump properties that is for the purpose of campaigning. I mean, it is campaign money. And it amazes me that Republican candidates continue to support this guy when he is literally taking money out of your campaign. Your reelection campaign does not get money because Donald Trump is stealing it.
Yes.
And yet you're stuck with him.
What's the alternative? Exactly. Yeah. What's the alternative? The alternative is to turn on him and then you disappear.
One more line about the John Lewis funeral. Jeffrey sent us a note and said, I'm convinced the reason Trump didn't go to see John Lewis lying in state is because Barr couldn't get his Gestapo troops to tear gas and flash grenade to clear out the other attendees.
Yeah. You know, that's so close to being true. It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Just so sad. All right. And I have another note. Let me read this note. Cause this is on the Stuarts. This is on topic with the Stuart Stevens and the whole rewriting everything. Reader Tom wrote us and said, back in April, Joe Biden said he thought Trump might try to delay the election. In April, Joe Biden said that.
Yes, he did.
And several people at the National Review, headquarters of another Never Trump lifeboat.
Wait a minute. Is that America's most revered journal of white supremacy?
Conservative journal. Yeah. Right.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Several people at the National Review took note of what Biden said. Kevin Williamson has apologized. He admits he went too far in ridiculing Biden in April. But he doubled down on being hard on Biden. He wrote this week after Donald Trump wants to delay the election. Kevin Williamson wrote, Joe Biden is still a ridiculous crank. And it is still the case that there was no reason at the time to credit Biden's prediction.
Yeah.
But now here's Trump being Trump, limboing right under whatever the lowest bar of the day happens to be. I should have known better. And as Tom wrote, in other words, shorter Kevin Williamson, this is Trump being Trumpy, but Biden was out of line in predicting that Trump would be Trumpy.
Yeah. Well, my takeaway from this is, holy shit, Kevin Williamson has a job somewhere?
I know. Writing.
That's
political opinion.
Writing? He's being right? The racist douchebag is being paid to write somewhere? Oh, yeah. It's the National Review. Of course.
It's the National Review. He has employment at the National Review.
Last respectable stop on the wingnut welfare circuit before you collapse into Onan territory.
Very rough infrastructure week this week, Driftglass.
Yeah. Yeah. GDP down. GDP down 33% dropped the biggest drop in economic output since they started keeping records in the United States.
Horrible.
153,000 Americans are dead of COVID-19, and there's absolutely no plan in sight to fix any of this other than the election. That's the plan. The plan is to remove the current administration from the White House as quickly as possible. Get their boot off the throat of the American people. Get the criminals
have to fumigate the White House and check it for bugs.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
they're going to have to hire a whole bunch of people Russian bugs especially. They're going to have to hire a whole bunch of accountants just to see where all the money went. I know where all the credibility went. It went up in smoke. But
you can imagine what it's going to be like between November and January in terms of scraping money wherever they can. Oh, yeah.
Well, and this is, you know, Barack Obama came into office with basically three big problems: the economy, wars, and healthcare. Mm-hmm. Under 4 years of Donald Trump, everything is fucked. Mm-hmm. Everything. The Department of Education, the USDA, the Centers for Disease Control, the Environmental Protection Agency, every regulatory agency, the Attorney General's office, everything is fucked. Everything is broken. He has smashed every single thing he's touched to the applause of your racist, meathead, Republican friends and neighbors and colleagues. So Joe Biden's going to have a hell of a job just trying to put it back together again, much less pass sweeping new programs. And fortunately, he's going to have a whole lot of people on his side, at least for the first few months. But once these people regroup, look out. They're going to come for scalps. They will feel cheated that they lost, no matter how big a loss they take. If they take a loss, they will claim it's rigged, that it's broken. You thought Florida was bad. Imagine Florida times 20 states. Mm-hmm. And that's what the future looks like, because the Republican Party is no longer fit to be treated as citizens of this country or as a viable political party. They are an offense to democracy, and they need to be deprived of power at every level as ruthlessly as possible.
And a large part of their response to this virus in March was, well, it's blue states.
Right. Oh, that was Jared.
Yeah.
Jared's big plan was don't have no plan because it's all blue states and that's good for us. And it turns out viruses travel. Viruses infect people. Viruses go viral.
It turns out that's cleansing and genocide based on political opinion and the electoral vote of the state you're in, regardless of who lives there.
Yeah. Well, so we have genocide on the one hand, and we have the U.S. Postmaster General.
Who is a huge Trump donor, by the way.
Tampering with the U.S. mail.
Yeah.
Tampering with one piece of U.S. mail is a felony. How much is tampering with a billion pieces of mail? How much is tampering with the entire U.S. mail system in aid of a felon who is trying to rig an election on behalf of a foreign adversary? What's the sentence for that? What's the penalty for that? Because I don't want a Truth and Reconciliation Committee, because there will be no truth from these people. And I do not want to reconcile with them. I want them punished for this. I want them moved out of the civic life of this country forever.
Removed from political decision making, because they don't make decisions politically. They do not make governmental decisions.
So back to Peggy Noonan and that universe of people.
Really? Must we?
Well, just to make a point. And the point being, and I know I've said this before, it matters. It is incredibly important who controls the narrative, who controls the cameras and the microphones and the newspapers. The last time we had a massive shift in power, the people in power were not going to acknowledge that they were wrong, that there was anything that the Republican Party did wrong, that the Republican base were racist. That was never going to happen. And so you ended up with this fantasy during the first couple of years of the Obama administration. The Republican Party prior to the Obama administration simply didn't exist. The Bush administration simply vanished from history. That was a function of having conservatives in the media and corporations in the media committed to not talking about the horrible shit we had just gone through, because it was bad for business. It was bad for the people who paid them off. It was bad for their bottom line. It was bad for them personally because they were complicit. So control of the cameras, control of the microphones, control of the newspapers is vital. Your revolution will fail. This is why dictators always go for the radios, radio stations, controlling the communication infrastructure is important. Now, this week, I tried to address a common lament among way too many of my liberal brothers and sisters about why can't Democrats go after Republicans hard, crazy hard, like the Lincoln Project did. And I pointed out, I went through several examples, Jennifer Rubin being one of them, Joe Scarborough being one of them, New York Times being one of them, et cetera, write down a list. Here's what they're saying about the Lincoln Project. They're patriots. They're heroes. Oh, my God, these people are wonderful. And here's what they said about liberal bloggers and liberal podcasters and liberal posters when we were saying exactly the same stuff before Trump was here. We were Cheeto-smeared, basement-dwelling losers. That was Joe Scarborough. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Rubin went on long tears about what a feckless idiot Barack Obama was and his water-carrying liberal idiots or blah, 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 blah. The reason I wrote this was there has been a rich and deep, and I used a long quote from the late Steve Gilliard, a rich and deep and scathing criticism of the right that would look absolutely at home in any Lincoln Project ad that's been going on for decades. The right. reason it never went anywhere is because anytime any liberal stepped out of line, the establishment media flattened them. Yeah. Absolutely flattened them. Anytime anyone suggested that maybe, I don't know, the Swift voters were liars, they were flattened by the mainstream media. Remember Hillary Clinton?
Anytime anybody suggested that the Tea Party was actually registered Republicans.
Oh, can't have that.
We didn't announce that until 2012. It took years for the mainstream media to acknowledge that the Tea Party was AstroTurf.
David Brooks in 2012 got hysterical when Barack Obama ran for office as a politician.
Yeah.
And he wrote this long screaming column about, I'm a sap. I was fooled. He fooled me. He's just another politician. When Hillary Clinton said a percentage of Republican voters really are deplorable, they dropped
She was talking about the Klan. Right. Yeah.
They dropped a fucking house on her on Meet the Press. Mm-hmm. She stepped out of line and said, you know, some voters are pretty bad people. And they absolutely leveled her. And my favorite example my least favorite are Mann and Ornstein. Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein, who said that it's not both sides. Back in 2012.
This is a Republican problem, and it's the way they govern.
These are boring centrist policy wonks. And they finally looked at each other and said, we got to say it. We got to tell the truth. This is not both sides. This is the Republican Party. The Republican Party is the problem.
And they were blackballed.
And the mainstream media blacklisted them, and they disappeared for years. I think they were on the Chris Hayes show once, but all of the places they were usually invited absolutely cut them off at the knees. So you can scream yourself hoarse about why don't liberals write hard and attack hard and use critical language and really dig in. We do. We have been doing this for decades. The problem is we weren't friends with Joe Scarborough.
Right.
Charlie Sykes is friends with Joe.
Let's be clear, too. Everybody in Washington read that op-ed in the Washington Post from Ornstein and Mann. It was the most read thing, the most discussed thing at cocktail parties and lunches and dinners and everything else. Mm-hmm. But it was banned from television.
Yeah.
Because you do not say one side is to blame on television.
And even though that's the truth. So the fact is that liberals and Democrats, I'm a Democrat, have been writing and critiquing and using any platform we could carve out for ourselves because we have no friends in the corporate media to claim the right to tell the truth in the public square. And every single time, the same people who are applauding the Lincoln Project for their patriotism and for standing up and giving them, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars in free airtime week in, week out, are the same people who wouldn't let a liberal within a mile of a microphone to say exactly the same thing back when it might have made a difference. That's what's going on here. They don't want us in the fight. They don't want us near a microphone because we keep telling them things they don't want to hear. And the only way you're allowed to tell the truth in this country on television in front of a large audience is if you're a conservative and if Donald Trump is in office and Donald Trump takes a giant shit all over you personally. These people didn't give a shit about what the Republican Party was doing to the country. Right. Joe Scarborough didn't give a shit about Donald Trump until Donald Trump went after his girlfriend.
Right.
Then suddenly, oh my God, Donald Trump's the worst person in the world. And because Joe Scarborough controls the camera, no one on his set is allowed to mention that Joe used to be friends with Donald Trump. You've given him tens of millions of dollars in free airtime on this show.
You're apparently a member of Mar-a-Lago. You spent Christmases and New Year's with your kids at Mar-a-Lago in 2014 and 2015.
So don't tell me that liberals don't do this. We've been doing it for decades. The problem is the people who control the cameras and who will control the cameras in January of 2021 do not allow us anywhere near. That's the cancel culture. That's what cancel culture looks like. When you've been right for decades and the fruits of your rightness are all around you and the people who control the cameras are so threatened by you being right, they will not allow you anywhere near the public square. That's cancel culture. And that's the end of my little tirade about that.
You had an interesting little story here about the proper way to display Confederate statues in public.
Yes.
You want to share that story briefly?
Sure. Well, you know, it's a story that I remember being told several times back when I was a kid. And it's from Chinese history. It's the story of – I'm going to mispronounce every name in this, by the way, just so you're clear. Hal Sparks, if you're listening, I apologize. I do not speak Mandarin. I'm going to get every name wrong. But it's the story of Yu Fei. That history states was a loyal general, loyal Chinese general. Yu Fei was arrested and later executed on false charges. The plot was carried out by a Chinese politician named Qin Hu and his wife Lady Wang in a conspiracy that was known as the East Window Plot. For their part in Yu Fei's death, iron statues depicting Qin Hu, Lady Wang, and two of their subordinates, all in kneeling positions, were placed in front of Yu Fei's tomb. For centuries, these statues had been cursed, spat, and pissed on by passersby. But in modern times, these statues are now protected as historical relics. There's a poem hanging on the gate surrounding the statues, and it reads, "The green hill is fortunate to be the burial ground of a loyal general. The white iron was innocent to be cast into the statues of traitors." If you'd like to put up Confederate monuments,
put the heads of the Confederate generals on the ground around the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah. Put them
on the ground around Martin Luther King.
Put them on their knees, hands bound behind them, so that people can piss on them. Yeah. I have no problem with that. We lack a sufficient quantity of public urinals on the public on the mall. I say let every public urinal have a Confederate general's face in the toilet. I'm perfectly okay with that Confederate monument. The nation Nathan Bedford Forrest Memorial Shitter is perfectly okay with me. But our statues are not used in this country to remind people how much these people should be hated because they were traitors. They're used to celebrate those people because the Confederacy never died. It simply turned into the Republican Party.
Right, right. All right, let's do a news roundup real quick.
Yeah.
Washington Post front page from today. These are the stories.
All these headlines are on the front page of the Post.
Front page of the Washington Post. Yeah. Trump suggests delaying election. U.S. economy contracts at record rate. Many economists urge Congress to go big on the next relief bill. I assume that article has something about the Senate going on a three-day weekend and not doing anything.
The Republican Senate.
The Republican Senate. Sorry, I broke my own rule. Republican Senate. Mail backlog raises fears of delays in ballot delivery. DHS is gathering quote-unquote intelligence on journalists covering Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Nation's unrest looms as Lewis is eulogized. And Herman Cain dies of COVID-19.
Yeah. If you want to know why we do a news roundup but kind of skim the surface of it, it's because that fire hose of bad craziness comes at us all day, every day.
And that's our life.
Yeah, that's what we do. When we're not on this podcast, that's pretty much what we're doing.
I wake up and at 9 o'clock in the morning, I face that every day. Okay.
Federalist Society co-founder Steve Calabresi, who voted for Trump and defended him during the Mueller investigation, called Trump's suggestion to delay the election, quote, fascistic, and grounds for the president's impeachment in a New York Times op-ed. First,
during the last 100 days, when he's now at 34% approval rating, Stephen Calabresi, who supported him and voted for him after the Access Hollywood tape.
Yep. They're sprinting for the lifeboats. And we all know what happens when people sprint for the lifeboats in the last 100 days. You burn the lifeboats.
You burn the lifeboats, folks. Burn the lifeboats.
This is from Talking Points Memo. This is Jared Kushner's COVID-19 team ended a plan for nationwide testing because they didn't want to help the blue states. We've already mentioned this a little bit before, but at Talking Points Memo, it goes into a greater depth. It's treason.
And so
it's
attempted
genocide. Yep. It's just it's
genocide. Yeah. Yeah. And Vanity Fair. All of those big blogs are talking about this. Mm-hmm. Liberal cancel culture claims another victim. Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Former Klan Grand Wizard David Duke has been banned from Twitter.
Oh, no. Here's an actual quote from Attorney General Bill Barr during the same week and just about the same day that John Lewis passed away. When people resist law enforcement, they're not peaceful.
Yeah, I've got something to say to Bill Barr, but I'm not going to say it.
I think there should be a monument to him on the mall. That's all I'm saying.
surrounded by a urinal and a shitter.
What is the urinal? That's what I'm saying.
Fearing Trump interference, FBI agents hid copies of the Russia investigation documents.
Yeah.
Of course they did. And all that stuff is going to, how much is going to come out in January or February of next
good
year?
Good question. I think the shredders will be going, it'll be like the Chinese embassy. They'll be burning documents all night long at the White House.
I wonder about that.
Trump doubled down yesterday on his suggestion that U.S. should delay the November election, repeatedly lying about the security of mail-in ballots and insisting that, quote, smart people all know how unreliable voting from home is, while stupid people keep pretending it's safe.
He is shooting himself in the foot big time.
He is.
I people on Twitter have been suggesting today, you know, yeah, Republicans should just boycott vote by mail.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Stay at home. Don't do it. Sit on your hands.
Don't do it.
Protest.
It's a Bill Gates conspiracy.
It is. They're going to chip you.
Put a chip in the head. All right. The Department of Homeland Security compiled intelligence report about the work of American journalists covering protests in Portland. Again, fascistic, you think?
Yeah. And today in Demon Semen news, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter all removed a video shared by Trump that baselessly claims there's a cure for the coronavirus. There is no cure. The video, published by Breitbart, surprise, surprise, shows a group of people calling themselves America's Frontline Doctors, which is a website that was created, I think, a week ago, and claiming to be doctors who've worked with COVID-19 patients. One member of the group, who identified herself as Dr. Stella Emanuel, claimed that, quote, you don't need masks to prevent the spread of coronavirus, which is going to come as a huge surprise to Herman Cain, because hydrochloroquine is a cure. Emanuel's other medical claims include doctors using alien DNA in medical treatments, and the government is run by lizard-like reptilian aliens. That certain medical issues like endometriosis, cysts, and infertility and impotence are caused by sex with, quote, spirit husbands and, quote, spirit wives in the dream world.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, and this is someone that Donald Trump promoted repeatedly.
He thought she looked good on TV.
And then said, I don't know anything about her. I know that, but many people.
Her, but she looked good on TV, and many people told me she's a smart doctor.
Many people told me she's great. And, and you know what? All the large web organizations may have taken this down, but our local crackpots are running with it, people. They think she's a genius. They want her to be the new Surgeon General.
The most racist tweet Donald Trump has ever tweeted was this week. And that is really saying something.
Yep.
Donald Trump vowed on Twitter to protect the, quote, suburban lifestyle dream, unquote, promising that Americans would, quote, no longer be bothered or financially hurt by having low-income housing in their communities.
Yeah.
He is undoing Obama Fair Housing rules
mm-hmm.
and protecting America's suburban lifestyle dream.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no code there, folks.
No. Don't worry, white people. I got your back.
Yeah.
You know what? We're white. We live in sort of a suburb. And you know how we're going to vote, Donald? We're going to vote your fat ass right out of office.
We're going to vote you right out of office.
Donald Trump is wondering aloud why nobody likes me during a White House coronavirus briefing. Because, you know, it's always all about him.
After testing positive for COVID-19, Louie Gohmert, the smartest Republican in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know my dad called me to tell me that Louie Gohmert had COVID?
No, but that sounds like something your dad would do.
Hey, I got some news. Louie Gohmert has COVID. All right, Dad, thanks. After testing positive for COVID-19, Louie Gohmert said he will take hydroxychloroquine.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably caught it because he was wearing a mask.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't see my middle finger go up in the air, no. But it did.
At the extreme other end of that spectrum, White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, possibly future President Nancy Pelosi, issued a mandate that all members wear a mask while inside the House.
She's trying to protect them from the Louie Gohmert germ.
Yeah, because, you know, I thought COVID was smarter than to mess with Louie Gohmert, but I guess it's not.
Mitch McConnell sabotaged any hope of a bipartisan COVID relief bill before shutting down the Senate and going on a long weekend.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about the local news.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it.
There is. Well, I want to mention, because we mentioned it last week, that the million unmasked march was about 999,000 people short. about 150 losers showed up dragging their children along with them last weekend in front of the statue of Abraham Lincoln downtown and were laughed at pretty thoroughly. Local media just rolled its eyes. This was going to be the big march. This was going to be the counter protest, a million unmasked march. One of the promoters, a prominent local wingnut and owner of a Godfather's Pizza franchise, penned a sad obituary for Herman Cain because the two halves of the Republican brain do not talk to each other at all.
Oh, and what a loss it is that this wonderful entrepreneur died of COVID-19.
And founder of our company died of COVID-19. Meanwhile, masks are a hoax, people. It's all a fucking hoax. And and this is what normal people, people who haven't interacted with them or followed politics for a long time, just can't understand about Republicans, that they can actually have those two thoughts in their tiny brain at the same time. But they do. And you got to learn to understand that, that they can say one thing one day, see the exact opposite the next day, and do not understand why you're looking at them like they're crazy.
We in Sangamon County are now one of 11 counties in Illinois at the pandemic warning level. We had 45 or so cases in the past week. And this is actually very comforting to me that we have government in the state of Illinois that is really carefully tracking this and saying, whoops, watch out. There's this level of testing. We're closing the bars. There's this level of testing. We're closing the restaurants. We're this level. And coming out and warning counties, look, you've got to wear a mask. You've got to wash your hands. You've got to stay inside if you're able to, because the cases are going up and they're watching it very carefully. And letting people know and providing them with facts and information so they can tailor their behavior to the fact that we have a spike. And it is comforting to have a government that is doing that.
It is.
I'd rather have J.B. Pritzker give me the bad news. No, your county is getting hot. You know, you're getting a lot of cases. We're going to close restaurants. We're going to close, you know, this particular area. We're doing contact tracing in this area. That's competence.
Yeah. And that's giving people ample warning of the consequences of their actions.
Right.
If you do X, Y will happen. That's just the way it's going to be.
All right. So now we got to talk about DJ's Cafe.
Yeah.
We've talked about DJ's Cafe many times before. DJ's Cafe is in Springfield, Illinois. And it is the place that we always mention when we're talking about the New York Times coming to a rural area and interviewing Trump voters at a diner. DJ's Cafe is the diner that you would go to in Springfield if you wanted to interview Trump voters. That's just a fact.
And I have been there many times, and it is a
business. You didn't go there.
No, I don't go there
to be a Trump supporter.
No, I go there because there's a meeting there that I'm required to attend or something like that. And it is a wingnut hangout. This is a place where people who are comfortable in their support of a racist asshole can go. Let their hair down, put their feet up.
Bacon and eggs.
Bacon and eggs and talk about, you know, Barack Obama, the Kenyan usurper, and how much they love Donald Trump. This is where the local paper sent reporters in December to talk about impeachment and talk about the Trump supporters and how much
the Republican side.
Oh,
right.
Gosh, it's just a waste of time. You know, it's just a whole silly. It's all silly. It's great. So the Republicans in this place were either it's all silly and dumb and it's a Democrat plot, or both sides are bad. Everything's bad. And why are you making a big deal out of this? So that's the cafe. This is a notorious wingnut hangout in Springfield, except it's not anymore.
No, because Dennis, who is the D in DJs, decided to post a thing on Facebook.
Yeah, that was bad.
And it was all about George Floyd and him being a criminal and F word, and him being a thug and F word.
And he had it coming.
And if you don't, he had it coming. And if you don't like it, you, meaning the reader, can eat a bag of dicks.
Right. And I didn't know bag of dicks was on DJ menu, but apparently it is.
And then he deleted that post, but not in time.
No,
many people made screenshots of it.
Yes, and sent him our way, because this place is literally blocks from where we live.
This is, and I mean, I'm an out of shape middle-aged lady, but I literally could walk to DJ's Cafe if I had to. Yes,
and fortunately, don't have to anymore because it's closed.
It's closed.
Those
well, liberal- David, let's let's note that they didn't firebomb the place.
No, not at all.
And that was the comments on certain websites was, you know, if you talk about this, you're inciting violence. It's like, no, he's the one that wrote Eat a Bag of Dicks. He's right. A thug, you know, F word. The Black Lives Matter folks mm-hmm. went to that cafe and surrounded the cafe. The sidewalks that surround the cafe are now covered with chalk graffiti about Black Lives Matter and the names of people who've been murdered by police.
Right. That was
George Floyd, et cetera.
That was the horrible liberal overreaction to this.
It was the liberal overreaction to this Facebook post. Yeah.
His daughter disowned him.
His daughter disowned him and said, I'm not cleaning up your mess and I quit. And she'd been working at that restaurant for like 30 years, I think
18
since she
years.
Was 14 years old. Yeah. Okay. I know since she was 14 years old. And she said, I'm done with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not cleaning up your mess. And here's my statement to the, it was in the paper today. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm done.
Yeah.
And my employees said they're not coming back either. Yeah. And we're done.
And frontline staff wanted to know if they're going to ever reopen. And she's like, I'm out. Yeah. I'm done. Yeah. It was always kind of, you know, a down at the heels diner. Mm-hmm. It got what was coming to it. And it got it in just the right way. This local business owner decided to get on his high horse and claim and let his freak flag fly. And that's his right. He can. And then, of course, later when he got, apologize, it was if anyone was offended.
If anyone was offended, we all make mistakes.
We live in a fallen world and we're all sinners. Nope. And his business is now effectively out of business. It might reopen. I hope it reopens as the John Lewis Cafe or the Black Lives Matter Cafe.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter Cafe would be good. Yeah.
But this is exactly how it's supposed to work. You get to say whatever you want.
You get free speech, baby. Free speech.
And then when it turns out that everyone hates you for your really shitty racist attitudes and decides we're not going to buy from you anymore, that's their freedom of choice too. That's not cancel culture. That's the marketplace of ideas. And you, sir, have taken a giant shit in the marketplace of ideas and no one wants to step in it anymore. So bye-bye, DJ's Cafe. Bye-bye.
Go ahead and talk about John Cass.
Yeah, John, speaking of liberal cancel culture, another noble man has met his untimely and unfair ending due to liberal cancel culture.
No, he hasn't. He's got a column in the Chicago Tribune.
last week, as you know, John Cass let his anti-Semitic clown out of the box with a long screed about liberal mayors and liberal cities and George Soros. And everyone reacted pretty much exactly as you would in a civilized country.
Calling him a freaking anti-Semite. Yeah.
The Tribune cruelly punished him by moving his column back a few pages. So, my God, is there no limit to this liberal cancel culture?
Apparently, the Catholic diocese is deciding not to have a mask mandate in their reopening schools thing. They're going to take temperature every morning, and wherever they can practice social distance, they'll do that. But, you know, whatever. Okay.
Our local bishop is a fucking nut.
Is a nut. Yeah. We have some breaking news about Johnny Ernst.
Oh, no. Johnny Ernst
Iowa?
Charlie Pierce's very special friend, I believe.
Very special friend.
Yeah, no, they're very special friends. So lay it on me, baby.
Well, she refuses to respond to anything Donald Trump says or even talk about it. And Donald Trump doesn't actually exist, except, of course, she does support him, but not really. But she doesn't want to talk about it. She's focused on her own campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And she's running for re-election. And, you know, she's trying as best she can to avoid talking about anything Donald Trump does.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much a Susan Collins type situation.
She's concerned, but not alarmed.
Mm-hmm. She decided to attack her opponent by saying that her opponent is hidden in the basement taking selfies with her dog Ringo.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that she has no opinion about her president wanting to delay the presidential election,
mm-hmm.
but she has taken the time to learn the name of her opponent's dog and to attack dog selfies,
mm-hmm.
Apparently shows where her priorities are.
She's got a lot of time on her hands. I mean,
she's going to have a lot more time on her hands after November.
Yes, she will. Well, once you've decided that you're not going to do anything about anything and whatever Mitch McConnell says is fine with you.
She had no policies about anything. No. So, But she is apparently anti-dog selfies.
Yeah, which is great. The internet loves those people. Yeah.
Internet loves people that hate dogs. Yeah. And so allow me to say that each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week we are going to go canine to give Johnny Ernst a dish of medicine.
If you will, a DJ Cafe heartburn. So
this week's internet kitty is a pair of good old hound dogs for the dog days of summer. And for Johnny Ernst, Bailey and Guinness. What wonderful dogs they are.
Do you suppose that family is Irish in any way?
I do not know, but these dogs sure are. And they are posing very calmly for the camera, but you know they can track a varmint in no time at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And of course, Bailey and Guinness, when they're not hunting varmints, eat freshly poured pet food, our fake sponsor. And I'm going to try a Sam Elliott voice for this one, but just in honor of Bailey and Guinness, whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store drink, your dog will sit on the back porch and wait very patiently for you to serve up a heaping helping of freshly poured.
Can I give it a try?
You go ahead.
Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store drink, your dog will sit on the back porch and wait very patiently for you to serve up a heaping helping of freshly poured.
Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Bailey and Guinness, our wonderful hound dog, hunting varmints, dogs. Take that, Johnny Ernst. At our Facebook page or website, the person responsible for Bailey and Guinness recently graduated from Kent State, where my dad taught for many, many years. So congratulations on that as well. Our listener, Dave, recorded this Kinks parody. And so it's about 2 minutes long. I'm going to tag it on to the end of the podcast and hope you enjoy it. Thank you, Dave, for letting us share it.
We hate him here. They hate him there. His orange face, fake yellow hair. But if you march for justice, he will gas you with the rest, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fascists. Yes, he is weak, he is a clown. For stronger men, his love abounds. Adolf and Benito are the ones he loves the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fascists. Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
He uses power only as a weapon. And if he could, he'd lock up every journalist tonight, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fascists. His nameless thugs pervert the law. They aim to maim. That's what they're for. But if your crime abets him, he will get you off scot-free, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fascists. Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
We can't wait to see him in a jumpsuit. It could match his pumpkin face, or better yet, in stripes, for the dedicated follower of fascists. He's a dedicated follower of fascists. He's a dedicated follower of fascists.
And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag save the post office. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job and a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details, our PayPal, postal address information, Patreon, GoFundMe, Buy Me a Coffee, and merch. All of it is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties think my impersonation is way more Dale Robertson than Sam Elliott.
Dale Robertson of...
Tales of Wells Fargo.
Tales of Wells Fargo. Yeah. This is one of Drift Glass's shows.
Yeah, well, now it is.
He also likes Forged in Fire.
I do. I will admit.
Forged in Fire.
I will admit, right out of the box, I love Forged in Fire. If it's rigged in any way, I don't want to know.
No.
it is an absolutely delightful show of a skill set I do not have and respect greatly. So.
Yeah. Well, they make knives.
On a timer.
On a timer, and they do a really amazing job. A lot of them mm-hmm. really do. It's
and most
skill.
Of them look exactly like all the rest of them. So,
like you would expect a full time knife maker to look.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the knife makers who don't have, you know, the $30,000 workshop. You can tell the difference between those that do and those that don't.
It's a wonderful. There's always a plucky one who pulls it out at the last minute, and it's fun to watch people do something really well that they shouldn't be able to do at all, and given time and constraints, et cetera, and take a lot of pride in their work. And I haven't seen anyone ever leave that show and say, "I got screwed. It's all political."
No, they all have good sportsmanship. Yep.
Good sportsmanship. I really respect this. I came and tried to do my best. I think I did. It was great competing against these nice people. Like, damn, that's great.
Speaking of good sportsmanship, well, again, welcome to the podcast world, Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, welcome. Again, you newbies, we understand. If you want to come on here, give you a few points.
If you need any help with the sound editing part of it, let me know.
If you want to know how to trim 80% of what your husband says and leave it on the floor without anyone noticing, talk to Blue Gal. She's really good.
I'm very good at that.
Yeah. Love you, baby.
Bye, Drift Glass. Love you.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.